ANN Cast. I'm Justin Savakis.
This is Zach Burgee. Welcome to our inaugural show. Hopefully, maybe you heard the test show we did a few weeks back. We got a lot of great feedback from you guys, so thanks for everyone who listened to that. With us today in the booth is our special guest and probably often third host of the show, Bamboo Dunk.
Great to be here.
You sound really enthused. So for those of you who haven't heard the show before, well, most of you haven't heard the show before, we're just going to chat and take some questions from Twitter at the end. If you have any questions for us, make sure you're subscribed to my Twitter feed at ANNZach, and every week I'll put out a blast letting know, you know, we want your questions. And, yeah, you can ask us anything we want. We'll be doing that at the end of the show. So for our discussion today, I know we all sat through, Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. So that's sort of a top of the show, what we're talking about here. Bamboo, you want to start?
I think it's important for me to disclose that I actually really, really, really liked the original Full Metal Alchemist series. So I had really high hopes going into Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood.
Did you, though?
The first series?
Well,
high hopes?
I had to watch the original series two or three times.
Right.
But I loved it. But knowing that this was just a remake, I didn't have, like, super high hopes.
I loved the first series so much that I kind of thought that they would take whatever was good about the first series and then just keep going, just continue with that. You know, keep the drama high, keep the suspense high. And I was hoping for this amazing production with better graphics.
Even knowing that you'd have to sit through, because the first series shined in the last half. I mean, that's when it got really good. The first third of it or so, maybe I'm alone on this, I wasn't totally in love with Fullmetal Alchemist until about the halfway point.
Honestly, the first few episodes of the first series were a real slog for me. I really had to force myself to keep going because everyone told me to.
Right.
And I eventually was very, very, very happy that I did. And I think this new series probably is going to have the exact same thing happen. The first few episodes are introductory and expository, and, well, I just want to see where it goes from here.
Well, I mean, I'll cop to this. I mean, I sat down and started watching the first episode and said, nope, went to the second one, said, nope, not sitting through this again. Got through about the first 10, still just nothing. Like, I was flatlining. So I went and did a little bit of research to see if the show had picked up, because there's a lot of people out there talking about the show, obviously. And I should plug the blog I found it on. It's called otakurevolution.com. He does a episode-by-episode, play-by-play, basically. And apparently around episode 15 is where it starts diverting from the first series. Like, that's where it starts changing.
Didn't episode 16, like, just come out?
19.
That far, okay.
So 15, I guess, is where it starts. So thanks to that blog for letting me in on that. But I'm not really willing to sit through 5 hours of stuff that I don't want to sit through again to get to the news. I just don't. Maybe I'm alone. It felt super flat. It did not seem to have the energy or the interest of the first show. I don't know. Maybe. Bamboo, what do you think?
Well, what's going on is that because we've all seen the first show, we already know what happens, right? So I think the producers knew that we would know. So they took the same events, but they just rushed through them. So you don't really have any of that same suspense, which is a huge thing that I find is lacking. They take the events and they just barrel through them so that they can get to episode 15 as fast as they can. And it feels rushed.
Right. Well, it's nice of them to do that for us, but I won't be eagerly awaiting season one, part one, with the first 13 episodes on DVD. Like, I'll skip that one. But the other thing is, honestly, the writing. I just don't think it's there, man. I mean, the writer of the show, Ayakawa, did the first one, and he's sort of infamous for being a little bit of a weirdo, right?
I mean, right.
He's written some pretty strange stuff. He's
got Angel Cop.
Yeah, right. Oh, exactly, God. Angel Cop. And he's also known for putting pretty heavy political, obvious political bents to his stuff, which, frankly, to me, I don't care what his political bent is. That always makes it more interesting.
Right.
Especially in anime.
Mm-hmm.
And this, it's not there this time. This seems like a straightforward adaptation of a shonen manga.
Well, that is kind of what a lot of people wanted, I'm told. A lot of people who were fans of the manga didn't like the anime because it diverged so much. I mean, it was really, it started off kind of the same thing, but by the halfway point, it was just on another planet. So I think this might be one of those times where they give the fans what they want, and the fans went, wait, we didn't want this.
Right. Well, actually, that's the thing, though. Like, And the response thusly has been, because that show had thunderous hype coming out of Tokyo Anime Fair. I mean, it was the big thing. It came out and, you know, insert tumbleweed noise here, didn't exactly set the world on fire. It doesn't seem to have generated half the excitement that the first one did.
Well, that's the problem with any reboot. I mean, it's a reboot. It's a show that you have done already. Therefore, no one is going to be as excited second time around. No one, you will never get that inherent excitement of finding something new.
Well, honestly, I think they could have started at episode 15. I think they could have taken everything before that and picked a good starting point that fans would already know and then just start with the new stuff. I don't think it's important to recap the first, you know, the first part of the series that everyone already knows.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is that it's not like a generation has passed since the last one came out.
Yeah.
It's not like they're reintroducing these characters to a whole new group of tweens and teenagers.
Yeah, that was literally 5 years ago.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And the American release was 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's not exactly. Yeah. Going from there, this is a remake, a recent remake. And I was having trouble coming up with similar examples of shows that have been remade a few years after they originally came out. You know, there's sort of the botched original version, and then they remake it, and I guess the general rule is that these are better? The remakes are better? Not in this case, obviously, but, I mean, what do you guys think?
It's definitely better with Hellsing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, well, yeah, of course I'm not going to argue that,
yeah.
But, like,
even canon, you know, a lot of people. Well, the first series is a little slow, but the second series, a lot of fans like it. You know, there's more emotion, it's characterization. I think a lot of times, the second time through, they've learned from the first series and they know, you know, what mistakes to avoid and how to take fan reaction and use it in a positive way.
You know, I'm going to get a lot of shit for this, but you know what remake I actually liked a lot more than the original? Urotsuki Dojo.
Thanks, Justin. We needed to take the conversation in this direction. Not enough porn on this show.
I'm sorry. I was actually really moved by the new.
You were moved.
I was moved.
To tears? Did you cry?
I did not cry, I don't think.
God, I want to say, did your penis cry? But anyway.
And you just did.
I'll cut that out. So, okay, you're going to have to go into this.
Well, the original, you know, the original had a lot of fans. I never really got it. I never understood the artistic appeal. I thought the original, frankly, was a piece of crap. Obviously animated on a shoestring budget.
Edgy opinions.
Horribly misogynistic. And just kind of like, what the hell is this? But a lot of people really liked it. And hey, whatever. It paid my bills for a time. And then, so the new one came out. And I'm just like, oh, crap. More Urotsuki Dojo. And I'm watching it. And I had to watch the whole thing to make trailers and DVD extras. And by the end of it, I was actually, not only was I into it, I was actually really involved with the characters, and maybe at that point I was so, you know, jaded that I wasn't offended by anything anymore.
Were you drinking on the job? I mean,
always.
Well, there you go.
It was CPM. What do you expect?
Although, FYI, the reason why people were into the first show was not because it was so, you know, mind-blowingly good.
Well, a lot of
but
people
it's because there
up,
was
a lot of people put up a whole bunch of BS analytical reasons why it was good, and you know, it was all BS.
Because they don't want to say like I enjoy vaginal intercourse. I mean,
so getting back to remakes,
I am actually of the camp that prefers remakes to deviate from canon. Like, I like it when movies aren't exactly like the book or like the manga or like the comic book or whatever, because then it's new, then it's interesting.
I'm completely on that page. Like, the first new Eva movie, the new Evangelion remake, I was bored to tears because I could literally lip sync along with every line of dialogue. But then right at the end, when they pull the rug out from under you and they start hinting at the odd, new, interesting things they're going to be doing with it, then I was like, whoa, I want to watch this now.
Yeah, we're all on the same page on that. I'm definitely with you on that. And I think the reason that that's considered like a weird opinion or not normal is because dumb nerds have a habit of bitching and moaning when it's not exactly what they expect it to be. So if you adapt a manga, it better be panel by panel, line by line, the exact same thing, or they complain and behave like you're butchering it or it's terrible or whatever. They don't tend to have open minds when it comes to remakes. Like, it has to be exactly the original. And frankly, I never understood that. If I've read the comics, I don't need to see them move. Like, it doesn't have to be the exact same thing. Like, okay, I've seen this story before, these exact words. But people demand it. I don't really understand why they.
Yeah, I don't get that either. It's almost like they're asking the creators to keep it as mediocre as possible.
Yes, please bring your show to my level, really, is what they're asking. Like, don't get it. Let's not get any crazy ideas about getting creative or interesting here. I just want to see what I've already seen.
You didn't use the exact same number of spikes on the hair design.
Yeah.
We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we'll talk some Ponyo. So, Zach, you are the only one of the three of us that has seen Ponyo.
Well, we should mention for context, we're recording this show the day before the quote-unquote wide release of Ponyo, which I think might be the biggest release of a Miyazaki movie in terms of screen count ever.
How many are they doing?
It's 800.
Oh, yeah, that's by far the biggest.
And they're not going to make a dime.
No.
They're not going to make a dime. But it's John Lasseter's baby. You know, he's doing this for posterity, not because... it's a money thing. But yeah, I guess you guys haven't seen it yet. I did the review on Annan. I graciously, I think, and probably too generously gave it like an A-. And I think that A- is judging it solely on the fact that it's a good... like, if I had kids, I would take them to see it. And I think they would love it. It's a great children's film. But there's just nothing in it for me as an adult. Like, it was too non sequitur, too fairy tale-ish. Like, it just... doesn't follow from one thing to the next. Stuff just happens and you're like, what the hell's going on? Like,
better or worse than Howl's in that regard?
It is choppier and less consistent in terms of the writing than Howl's.
Ooh.
And Howl's turns into a different movie in the second half.
Wow.
And then the entire conflict is wrapped up at the end with one line on Howl's. Ponyo just stops. It just ends. They don't wrap up a bunch of the storyline. There's a lot of strings hanging at the end of that movie. If I had to rank it, I mean, if I really had to rank it, I'd put it, geez, I guess I'd put it down near, if I'm just ranking all Ghibli stuff, I mean, I'd put it down there with Pompoko.
Mm. I love Pompoko.
Yeah, we all know you love Pompoko.
Hey. I don't denigrate your opinions.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you do, Justin.
All
yes,
the
do.
Time.
Pompoko. God. That movie is like, you look on the back of the video box for that, and it's like running time, and it's a little infinity loop. That movie never stops. It's like 5 hours long.
That movie makes me sob like a little girl being stepped on.
What? What about it?
The
balls? Is it the balls that make you cry?
Yeah. Balls make me cry. As they should use that. No. I really love the sense of nostalgia, and the there's a really strong sense of community that film portrays for me. I don't know. I completely understand how it's just too long and too meandering for some people, but I love my Pompoko.
That was the one that almost, like, when I was, you know, you when you first discover the guy, you just first discover Ghibli, you tend to, like, marathon everything they've ever done. That was the one that almost killed it for me. Because I got about halfway through it, I'm like, man, this is not as good as any of the other stuff we've seen. I think I saw it right after Whisper of the Heart. And so naturally,
Whisper of the Heart was good.
Whisper of the Heart's phenomenal.
Whisper of the Heart, I got my grandparents into.
Really?
I've never gotten them into anything animated before in my life. They got into Whisper of the Heart.
Wow. That's something. Bamboo, what do you think? What's your...
I actually prefer some of the non-Miyazaki Ghibli films the most. My favorite is actually The Cat Returns.
Wow, really?
It's so adorable, you know?
It's
you have
so
a hero,
blasé.
He's a dashing, like, handsome cat fellow. I think it's adorable. I mean, I love cats, I love animals, and I think it's very innocent, it's very sweet. So I love that movie.
It was a total throwaway for me.
I had trouble getting through it.
It didn't even seem like a Ghibli thing. It felt like someone else decided
No, it felt like, you know how every few years Madhouse tries to make a Ghibli movie and doesn't really succeed?
God, yeah.
That's what it felt like for me.
Remember Gonzo's attempt at making a Ghibli movie?
Oh.
Origin?
Oh, no.
Now on 2-disc Blu-ray.
Good luck with that one, Funimation.
Yeah. Oh. But back to Miyazaki. I think... honestly, Howl's Moving Castle for me was, okay, this guy needs to stop. He needs to retire. He's made his... Spirited Away was his masterpiece. He won an Oscar for it.
I thought it was Princess Mononoke. But go on.
Well, but, I mean, in terms of, like, the perfect end to a storied, historic career,
right.
Spirited Away would be a good stopping point.
Absolutely.
And I think, honestly, he's one of those directors where no one tells him, this script is pretty weak. Like
Oshii.
No one, like Oshii.
That was. I'm not sure if anyone else has seen this interview. There was a joint interview with Toshio Suzuki, the producer at Studio Ghibli, and Mamoru Oshii, And basically, the entire interview was Mamoru Oshii going, look, Ponyo isn't even a movie. What the heck happened? And Suzuki going, well, yeah, Miyazaki's kind of...
He just does what it feels like. And I mean, and he cops to it. He's like, well, I don't really write these things. They just sort of come out of my head.
Well, he Suzuki even said basically that Takahata used to keep tight reins on him. That's why Miyazaki would have very, you know, straightforward narratives that actually went somewhere. And now, the last few films, he's just kind of been left to his own devices. He commands too much respect, you know, now having won an Oscar, to have anyone tell him anything. And now it's just this big flailing mess of awesome-looking things that do nothing.
Well, it's funny. I mean, as of today, as of this taping, I checked Rotten Tomatoes this morning, and District 9, which opens on the same day as Ponyo, is better reviewed than Ponyo. It's by a few points. It's like 98 versus 95.
That doesn't mean anything.
I know, but it just, to me, it's amusing because there's all of these critics, I think, are just being really generous because they can't talk. You cannot talk shit about Miyazaki. You can't do it.
That thought occurred to me, too, because it's one of those things that I'll bet that 95% of critics don't really understand the appeal and never did, but he won all these awards, so they just kind of have to go with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe that.
And a lot of the reviews, I mean, I went through them. They all say, they all have little fresh tomatoes next to them, but most of the review is like, man, that ending was bullshit. Like, they're calling out the flaws of the film, but they always, in the end, and I guess I'm guilty of this too, in the end, they give it an A or a B plus or whatever.
It's another one by the master.
Yeah, exactly. Even though it's a deeply flawed movie. And it's almost like when you're sitting in the theater, even though he's not in the room, everyone's nodding and going, yeah, that was great. Yeah, it was real good. Like,
maybe that's a secret to be this kind of bitchy, old, scowling man. If you are a bitchy,
crank,
old, scowly man, your movies will get A's from all the critics.
And he is like the crankiest man alive.
And not make back your P&A cost.
Yeah. I wonder how much Disney's going to lose on that. That'll be interesting to see.
Let's see, 800 prints. A print is $1,000. So we're talking just on the print cost, they're nearing $1 million.
And I'm seeing there were ads all over Cartoon Network for it. I saw ads on...
Were there any on national broadcast, do you think?
Don't.
Because those are the ones that cost.
Yeah,
really. Comedy Central's
kind of
cheap.
Ads.
You haven't been seeing many ads at all?
I actually, were it not for like reading A&N, I would not know that Ponyo's coming out tomorrow. I would have no idea. None of my friends know that it's coming out.
I forgot, to be honest.
It's just, I don't think they're running a really good ad campaign.
Okay, so here's my question. Are either of you going to see it in the theater?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll say it.
No, Bamboo, no?
I'll eventually see it, but maybe when it gets to the Dollar Theater.
It's lower priority for me than District 9, I'll tell you that.
Right, right. Like, I'm going to see District 9 tomorrow. Probably not going to see Ponyo. Well, and you know what's interesting is that a lot of the reviews, if you read them, they all have one common thing, is that everyone, you know, kind of just like, oh, you know, it's okay. Oh, but if you have kids, you should take them to see it. So I think it's one of those caveat films.
So this is Indian in a Cupboard.
What?
Do you remember that? It was like the best reviewed kids movie ever, and no one went to see it, and it just died.
I think I remember that.
Maybe a better parallel, Iron Giant.
Oh, there
you
go.
Yeah, there you go.
But the difference is here.
Iron Giant's actually
good,
right?
Well, no, but my point was that, you know how Pixar and all the greats of animation, they make movies that are for everybody. There's something in it for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, all of us are huge Pixar nerds here.
Right.
You know, we love those films. Adults love those films. Old people love those films.
Except for Cars.
It's something, except for Cars. Gotta add that little asterisk. Except for Cars. Thanks, John Lasseter. There's something for everybody. Everybody loves those movies. Ponyo is for children and children only. Like, I can appreciate the artistry and the animation, and especially Tina Fey's performance, which is phenomenal. But that's it.
So if I go to see this, am I going to feel like the pedophile at Chuck E. Cheese?
No, you'll be the only one in the theater, Justin. You're assuming anyone else is going to be in that theater with you.
I'm sure it's decent counter-programming to District 9. I'm sure there will be some families in the audience.
But this week, and there are 5 movies opening this weekend, each aimed at a different quadrant. And Ponyo's going to get lost in the shuffle. There are literally 5 movies. The audience that's supposed to go see Ponyo is going to go see Band Slam.
Well, I think Ponyo
there are people that are
younger.
Going to see Band Slam?
Probably for the Twilight trailer that's on before it, that they advertise before it. But yeah, so...
I think it's a slightly different market. I mean, Band Slam is your, like, you know, 12 to 14-year-old, whereas, like, Ponyo is, like, your, like, you know, 5-year-old. you know, people are going to go see it during the day.
And cinema
have
nerds.
Other kids in tow. Yeah.
Miyazaki's a very cinema nerd thing to do.
Was.
And also, what do you mean was?
Well, maybe not after this one.
If people actually are like, watch this and go, okay, I'm done being in permanent kiss-ass mode when it comes to anything Miyazaki touches. Maybe, but the guy's old and it seems like kind of a bad idea to just suddenly, right. Let's jump on the Miyazaki hate train when he's in his 70s.
You know, I'm going to call it now. I think the vast majority of people who watch it, who watch Ponyo, who aren't in the age range, they're going to say they like it because, like, they're afraid to say that they might not like it because people might think, oh, well, you just don't understand the movie. Like, he's actually at that level now where people just assume they have to like everything he puts out or else, oh, you just didn't get it.
I think you're giving people way too much credit.
No. Dude, I'm calling it now. It's going to happen.
Well, I think, sure, the film snobs will do that, but I think most people don't give a crap what other people say. It's basically like internet forums. It's either the best movie ever or worst movie ever. And if they're not satisfied, it'll be the worst movie ever. How most people operate.
But to be fair, if you're not a film snob or you're not a kid, you're not going to go see Ponyo. You probably don't even know that Ponyo exists.
Right.
Granted.
So.
Okay, so using that as a launching point, favorite Miyazaki movie. Miyazaki, not Ghibli. Favorite Miyazaki.
Oh, Mononoke, no doubt.
Absolutely?
Absolutely Mononoke.
Probably Nausicaa.
Yep, Nausicaa is me. Definitely Nausicaa. And the thing is, I think his Nausicaa comics are the best thing he's ever produced. Movies are all. It's that those graphic novels are great. And the movie's not anywhere near as good as the comics are.
Right.
But those comics are phenomenal. So, I mean, why Mononoke?
I love Nausicaa. It's not that I don't love the others. It's Mononoke hit me in a very specific way.
In the balls?
Yes.
Thanks, Zach.
Yes, Zach, in the balls.
I'm
to elevate the conversation.
I'm going to keep bringing it back to testicles. Go on.
All right. Mononoke, for me, has, in addition to the usual ham-fisted ecological message that Miyazaki crams into pretty much every one of his movies, it has a very, you know, very deep human side and some very interesting things to say about people and their motivations that isn't hypercritical human beings are evil and will destroy this planet. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of even-handedness and respect for people's intelligence is kind of sets it apart from the others.
Okay. That's good. I think it would probably be a toss up between if I really had to pick, it's Nausicaa, but Mononoke is probably a close number two. And additionally, it's sweepingly epic. I mean, just the pacing and the writing, it is as close as I've ever seen an anime film get to being appropriately called an epic.
Yeah.
In the classic style.
God, the music.
Yeah, and the music, just, yeah, everything about that. So,
Nausicaa's music didn't age so well.
It's very beep-boop 70s.
Very Casio.
Yeah. Yeah, so, least favorite? Anybody?
Howls.
Howls.
I don't like Howls.
Was anyone a huge fan of that?
I had trouble getting through it.
Really?
Yeah. It was a slog.
That came out during my days at Anime Insider, and I had to sit through it three separate times, twice subbed, once dubbed, and by the end, the dub helped it. Dub helped it tremendously.
It
filled in a bunch of holes that were not in the script, because in the Japanese version, there are giant swaths of the story that you can't really understand, and then they add in little bits of background dialogue in the English language version to make it make a little bit of sense, so you kind of know what's going on.
Yeah, they've done that a few times with those movies, and it usually helps.
Yeah, that's true.
I just thought it was boring. Like, it wasn't interesting. I didn't care what was going to happen.
Yeah, that was the thing for me. I didn't care about any of those characters.
I will admit, too, I was interested in Howl as a character. I wanted to know what was going on with him. I appreciated some of the scenes where when he was depressed. You know, I kind of liked that stuff. I thought there was a good movie in there somewhere. There was just too much. And it turns into a different film in the second half. It starts being about something completely different. You're suddenly following this big war, and you know, I don't know. No, that's a no on Howl's.
Well, I just thought the conflict was a little shallow compared to some of his other films. You know, like with Nausicaa, you have this, you have this big epic, you know, like man versus nature type of thing. You know, just it's this huge big thing. How old, like, you know, there's a witch, there's some things here and there, like there's a creepy little scarecrow. I didn't care. It wasn't interesting. It took me 3 days to watch that movie because I kept pausing, getting up, getting a snack, whatever, because it wasn't interesting.
I really hope that Miyazaki watched Up and someone said, hey, this is how you make a movie with an old person as the main character. But then again, apparently he doesn't watch any of that. He doesn't watch Pixar stuff at all, which doesn't shock me, but
I don't think he watches any other animation. Probably. In fact, I don't think he watches anything.
He just reads the newspaper and puts out cigarettes on his lawn.
Right.
All right, that's enough. That's enough Miyazaki chat for one lifetime. Let's get to some Twitter questions. Thanks to everybody who sent them in. We got plenty of them here. We're going to start out with a question from Isandra. Says, since Justin said Cardcaptor Sakura wasn't bad, in quotes, it just wasn't that bad, does he have a Magical Girl series he likes better, or does he just not care for the whole genre?
I sense butthurt fan, do you?
No, she's a cool, I know this person, she's cool.
Darn it. It's true I'm not a huge fan of Magical Girls, because I don't really feel that I'm the target either of the target demographics for them, either little girls or creepy old guys that like little girls and transformation sequences. Cardcaptor Sakura was fun. Honestly, my favorite Magical Girl show is Nurse Angel Ririka.
Mm-hmm.
If only for the ending. But yeah, it's true. I'm not a huge fan of that subgenre.
Yeah, but what do you think? You got a favorite? Do you even like the genre?
I do like the genre, but in moderate amounts. At some point, like, I like the first 12 episodes of any given Magical Girl show, and then at some point I just kind of stopped caring. My favorite one, actually, I really like Fancy Lala. I thought that was really cute.
Oh, I really like Fancy Lala.
I remember liking that show.
And yeah. What was the one that's Fancy Lala with cancer?
Full Moon Will Scotch Day.
Yeah, right.
Love that.
I really like that. Well, I love it when kids die of cancer.
Oh, jeez.
I'm kidding.
She doesn't die in that show, does she? Does she die?
No, she does not. Spoiler alert, she does not die in that show.
Okay, sorry, you've been spoiled on
someone else dies, though.
Well, don't.
Been spoiled on a show that you can't even see anymore.
Yeah,
so.
Really. Viz didn't even finish that.
Nope. I don't think they even got to the halfway point.
Yeah, probably not.
No.
When they realized it was a giant money sink.
Right.
Okay, next up is from PhoenixFire24. What are all of your opinions on the upcoming Astro Boy movie? I saw the trailer and I'm not impressed. Anybody? I was at the panel, so I can talk about this a little bit.
I saw the trailer and was mildly impressed.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't really have an opinion on it right now.
I saw about 10 minutes of it at Comic-Con, and it is Astro Boy by way of Nickelodeon. That is exactly what... I could not describe it any better than that. It is... It would be right at home playing after an episode of Ben 10 or Jimmy Neutron or whatever, mm-hmm. whatever's on Nick, which is fine. I understand. They have an interest in making money, and it's a very kid-friendly look.
But for anyone over 15, it's going to be instant kryptonite.
Exactly. And I wonder if they're going to make money with it. I have to wonder. They're going to have to really promote the hell out of it to get it out there. I think... from a commercial standpoint, it was probably a wise choice to do what they did with it. But I've never been a huge Astro Boy fan, so maybe it's just because I don't give a shit.
Astro Boy was really kind of... It was a little kid series to begin with.
Yeah, but then it got dark at points, and everybody always makes the point,
what Japanese little kid series doesn't get dark?
That's true.
You have, like, Unico that's you know, veering into, you know, genocide territory.
And we all... who can forget the... the episodes where Chibi Maruko-chan goes to rehab. But see, Bamboo, it's a non-starter for you?
Eh, no.
Here's one that came in from a direct message from Otaku Review. Hypothetical for the three of us. Well, I guess for Justin and I, this question doesn't really pertain to Bamboo, who has other things to do with her life. But if anime disappeared off the face of the earth, what would your next job be?
Janitor.
You stole my answer.
I'd probably try to do something in film, either, you know, editor or something. I mean, I haven't just worked in anime. I've worked in, international licensing for other entertainment thingies. So, and I can edit, you know, video. I can write. So there's other things. I'd probably still be wallowing in the nether regions of the entertainment industry.
You should go into professional eating, Justin.
I've peaked. Really? I'm almost 30.
For those not in the know, Justin is infamous for having a voracious appetite and a bottomless stomach. So now you're in on the joke. I guess what I would do is, I do a comedy blog. I'd probably try to monetize that somehow. If not that, I would start taking some screenwriting classes and maybe try to get work as on some hacky sitcom somewhere. Maybe I could fit in there. That would be the dream job. More than likely, I'd wind up in a call center. So, here's one from Isla Yeats. Question, without naming names... We're going to name names on this one. Have you ever ran into any creepy forum users at conventions?
Oh boy, yes. Have I ever.
Everyone has one. If you guys got a brief story, go ahead, Bamboo. We'll start with you. Just a quick story.
Brief story. I don't have any brief stories. But there's a couple of stalkers, I guess.
You have stalkers?
I do have stalkers.
Are they from the forums?
Yeah.
Can we get a sample? You don't got to name names, but can we get an example of
something creepy
behavior?
That someone has done to you, trying to court you?
Oh my goodness. Actually,
they're probably all going to listen to this
show. Yeah, so I don't really want to talk about it because I'm pretty sure they know who they are. So
chances are,
thanks guys.
if you hang out in our forums, Bamboo is automatically not interested.
That actually goes for most of our female users, I've found. It's not a popular... Don't show up on our forums and try to flirt. It's a bad idea. And Justin, any creepy forum user stories?
No forum users. I have that classic story of the guy who, while I was talking to him at a con, started digging really deep into a nostril. Mm. Like, we're talking like second knuckle deep. and then... While he was talking and still making eye contact with me, pulled out a giant one and wiped it on the hotel sofa.
God, at least he didn't eat it.
Oh, come on.
I've never done this before or since, but in reaction, I literally just, bug-eyed, just went, I'm sorry, I can't talk to you anymore, and I ran.
That's terrible. I actually don't have any super creepy stories. I mean, every now and then, someone from the forums will show up to the panels, and I've had great experiences meeting 99.9% of our forum users. They're pretty cool overall.
Mm-hmm. Same here.
People are so much cooler in person than they are on the forums anyway.
That's not
just hard. As a general rule. Every now and then you'll get someone who tries to hang out a little too much, if we're going to dinner, you can't come. Sorry, it's not like we're trying to be rude, but...
Convention Klingons.
Yeah, they're a little etiquette.
A
little etiquette. most of my experiences have been pretty positive.
We did make a guy cry once.
We did?
Yeah, that time me and Jonathan, we were taping our video.
Go ahead, tell the story.
Well, this guy was just standing around looking at a life-size Ray mannequin, so, I just thought I'd have a little fun with him. I was going to go into the sexual innuendo, like, oh, look at that doll, she's your size, etc. Apparently, he got really offended, came to our panel later, and there were some tears.
Well, he came up to the mic.
Yeah.
What did he say?
I think, he said that, I don't remember these exact words, I think he just said we were, like, unprofessional and insulting.
Isn't he also like, I'm never going to read your site again?
Yeah, you have lost a valuable reader.
He sounded just like that, too. Yeah. He's just like that. Yeah. Exactly like that.
And he's not going to listen to the podcast because, he doesn't read anything.
I so wanted to use that footage just to spite him.
I don't know why we... You guys are too
really
nice.
Offended.
Well, it's one thing to... You don't provoke people once they're already upset.
Yeah.
Come on. He was asking for it.
Plus, the quote that I wanted to use from that interview was him saying, like, well, she's made of plastic. That's just unrealistic. And I have a real-life girlfriend.
Yeah, right.
I like how real-life girlfriend was in italics.
there's nothing worse than a humorless nerd. Nothing worse than a nerd with no sense of humor.
I would say there's nothing better.
You're alone on that. Yeah. Okay, so we got one here from, everybody knows this guy, ADV Nation. What was the spark that moved you from being fans to covering anime and being in the industry?
Kind of always was. I never wanted to be just a fan.
Right.
I don't know if there was a spark. I just kind of tumbled into it.
Me too.
Yeah.
It just happened. We were all ground floor folks. I mean, we were here in the late 90s.
Yeah, I mean, the minute that you realize that anyone can be a fan sub, you're like, I want to try it. And then one thing leads to another.
Well, I mean, from your standpoint, from a production standpoint, right. But I was just, I liked it and I could write.
Right.
And they needed writers. So A&N needed writers and then magazines needed writers. And here I am.
Yeah. Well, so, and Justin, you're the reason why we are all here at A&N.
Sorry.
Yeah. Apologize to the readers. Okay, I think. think, well, we got one more. One last one here. We'll wrap up with this. This is from Sarah Spot, who is a friend of the site. She's the other half of Chicks on Anime. And this is a very serious question. Which ANN staff member has the best hair? I'm going to just throw it out. I'm going to say Justin.
I think Zach. I think you have the best hair.
Not right now. It's bad right now. I need to get a haircut. Maybe Justin or maybe Chris back in the Frosted Tips.
Oh,
he
you stole my idea. I was so going to think of Chris in the Frosted Tips.
He doesn't have it anymore, but our beloved editor-in-chief, Christopher McDonald, at one point did a little frosting of the tips, and we all had a good time with that.
We chuckled, because it was the kind of bleach job where it turned kind of orange. A little splotchy orange. Sorry, Chris. No, but really, it did look pretty fabulous.
On the plus side, the great mistake we never made is asking him to cosplay as Vic Mignogna. That's really Okay, and with that, I think we're going to wrap it up. Thanks for listening, everybody.
This week, we are recording at NYAV Post in sunny Burbank, California, which is why we sound so good. Don't get used to it.
All right, Bamboo, you want to say goodbye?
Yeah, bye, guys. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, everybody. See you next time.
Take care.